We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Reps don't know. You know, Rudy Gobert still can't smell. He's had this
and the
for
indications. Yeah, and the majority. It may turn out that the majority of people who have symptoms have no lasting effects. And nevertheless, someone could randomly end up never getting their full lung capacity back because that's how this disease is bizarre. It affects different people in different ways. And again, there's going to be some risk. And you know what? Even if there's a vaccine, there's going to be some risk for everyone who leaves their house. Vaccines are not 100% effective. And we don't even know if you can get it twice yet. Like, there's a huge part of everything we're doing in certainly in America, but even in the whole world right now, that just involves an element of, yeah, man, it sucks. And that's what it is. But the NBA can't fix Florida. The NBA can't make the virus not contagious. The NBA can't create any sort of environment that's 100% safe that doesn't exist in the world right now, and especially not in America. So I think the question we need to be asking is, are they doing their best? And are they giving their workforce the latitude it deserves and needs to move freely and feel comfortable with their own health and safety?
I don't know that you can operate in that vacuum, though, because that only takes care of their culpability. It doesn't take care of best practices. And the fact is, around them, all around them, best practices are a rumor. I mean, and the Disney story is just part of that. You know, I mean, you've brought
but
all
what
these
do you mean
people,
by that?
You've brought, when all you these say... you've brought all these people into your care. Essentially, which is what Disney World is. It's a part of Florida. It's not an independent country. And all around them, the state basically has said, we're not going to help you in any way give you a better chance of keeping this germ-free or at least, you know, virus-compliant. And now the Disney folks don't want to pay for tests for people who in very, you know, very, very possibly could come into contact with the living quarters where these guys play, where these guys live when they're not playing. That to me, that's where I get off the train here. It's not that the NBA isn't doing the best it can. It's that all around them, their business partners in this particular venture aren't even coming close to trying. And at that point, if you run the NBA, at some point you have to ask yourself, if I'm surrounded by people who aren't operating in good faith, why am I doing this at all? And that's the issue for me. It's not a question of, is this the best the NBA can do? Yeah, it probably is. But in all ways around them, nobody's doing the best they can do. They're actually doing close to the worst that they can do. And that's the problem here. It's not that if you could make Disney World, you know, an impregnable fortress, fine, but it's not. It's part of a larger ecosystem, much of which is run by people who think masks are a sign of communism.
Oh, sorry, ahead, Matt, you raised your hand. I thought you were going to go.
No, did you? if you got one more point that you want to make on this, but I do want to get back
just
to Ian
one.
Desmond before we get into the Tuesday.
Oh, yeah. Back
to, we got a little more call, too.
Just quickly, I hear everything you're saying, Ray. But if the NBA is, as you say, probably doing the best they can, And if the Players Association is working with them and agreeing to go forward, and players who don't feel safe are given the chance to opt out, who is the aggrieved party?
The aggrieved party is yet to be determined, only because we don't know how many players are going to catch this, because everything around them is basically allowing the virus to run free, and the NBA's option is going to be at some point to say, you guys weren't there for us. We're pulling out. And that's where the dynamic comes in, because there will be people in the NBA who says, I need the money more than I need my employees' safety. And that is a choice that, frankly, I do not have a lot of confidence in that they will make the correct one.
Yeah, the aggrieved party. It's going to be like we're going to have an aggrieved party scale. Like, if anyone died, that'd be the most aggrieved. Somebody has to get hospitalized, put on a respirator, most aggrieved.
That's not what, you know. I mean, okay. Perhaps I'm not being clear. Obviously, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm saying.
No, everyone.
Who is the person?
Everyone's got big boy pants on. You want to go make big boy decisions that could have huge ramifications either way. You certainly have the right to go do that. I think the safest thing to do right now in terms of restarting sports is not restarting sports. Everyone in sports is like, we understand that's not safe. We couldn't give a damn. We're doing it anyway. So, okay, go ahead.
I don't think that's totally true. And let me make a perhaps awkward and maybe an analogy I shouldn't make. But right now, we're doing a sports talk radio show that we've all agreed is not totally essential. Lucas and Nash, two reasonably healthy young men, are asked to get up, go to work in a studio where they can't control who's in and out of it all the time, including janitors who are not ever tested for anything. And yet, we're all doing this show. So, I don't know how I can sit here doing a show that certainly is no more essential than the NBA, that very clearly puts Lucas and Nash at more health risk than they would be in if they were just at home, and then criticize the NBA for making a similar decision. We have all judged that the risk is not so substantial, and the reward for all of us and the community is big enough that it's worth doing. And I haven't seen anything from the NBA to suggest to me that they don't have their priorities straight as far as those things go. And until they really run afoul of those priorities that I think are correct, I'm going to trust them.
Let's go right to Lucas and Nash. How do you guys feel about it? I mean, you're the ones who matter the most. What do you guys think of that example?
Well, I understand what Kolsky's saying, and it's the same for anybody who works at Safeway who 7 months ago signed up to just be a bagger or a guy who goes and stocks shelves, and all of a sudden they're an essential worker who has to put themselves in harm's way on a daily basis. They didn't sign up for this, right? It's all same situation that we find ourselves in, and now the NBA players are going to find themselves in.
No one signed up for any of this. I mean, that's something that we got to keep on. This isn't anyone's fault. But boy, what do you do in the face of all of it? I will say that we have tried to create a bubble that is as safe for Lucas and Nash as humanly possible. Our Adam Silver, Matt Nahagian, took immediate, decisive action. We were the very first radio station, I believe, in the United States of America that send every host home to do their show from home. Obviously, Lucas and Nash are needed in studio for all the electronics to happen for all this. If these guys had either of them, been in a more likely to catch it group or a dangerous pre-existing condition group, I would have called these guys and said, fellas, it ain't worth it. Don't do it. Don't come in. But they've made the choice to come on in. These NBA players are making their choice. And you know, what do? We criticize everything in sports. That's what Sports Talk Radio does. Hey, I wish everybody good luck. I really do. If they're right, maybe everything goes according to plan. If they're wrong, maybe people start really suffering. We don't know. It's crazy. Let's take one more call, and then I want to talk about Ian Desmond for a little bit, because we could chase this tail with our tiger teeth forever. We'd go round and round. Luke in San Francisco. Hello, Luke.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing well, thank you.
I've been listening since I called in, and just my opinion on it is it's a matter of economics, and it's just a matter of time before a lot of the jobs go back to normal. So I'm not sure how long economically a lot of people can hold out, you know, which is a lot. Since we live in a capitalist society, it's tied to our mental health in a lot of ways. So it's really, I think, the best testing ground is the NBA for them to come back. I mean, I know it's kind of like looking at it as like almost guinea pigs, but they have the most money. They have the most healthcare security around them. So if anybody is able to see how this is going to work out, I think it would be great for the NBA to do it first before, like, it's mandatory for more states and cities to start going back to work. Like, unless you can work from home, like I'm lucky enough to do myself, a lot of these brick and mortar companies, like they're going to eventually have to come back anyway. So I think the NBA being the ones to do it first is a great thing, because they're a team. It's a big team sport. They're seeing how profitable maybe it can be through television and outside without their fans. Because even next season, if this continues, they may have to do it without fans. So they have to figure it out now. So I think it's a necessity.
Now, Luke, thank you very much, man. Appreciate the call. Look, it is incredibly profitable. That's why there's nothing stopping it from happening. And, you know, what will the price really be? How about this? Here's one thing I know. We're all going to find out together.
Yeah,
there's no doubt about that. Whether this plane lands smoothly or crashes into a mountain, we'll be there watching live. So we will see.
And to be clear, I am by no means saying that, like, oh, this looks like it's going to be smooth sailing the whole way. No worries, everybody. I'm just saying the fact that it's dangerous doesn't make it an easy choice, because there are not good alternatives here.
To me, professionals are professionals. You want to go be a professional? That's your lot in life. To me, there should be no college sports until this is taken.
Totally agree.
Period. End of story.
You need a vaccine, or we should not have college sports.
Well, and if you just wanted to start doing a mental inventory of what really matters, you know, college sports, yes, it matters to college budgets, but does it matter to any of the kids? You know, I mean, it's insane. It's insane. Even if, hey, every one of these kids is absolutely in the don't need to worry about it age bracket. Well, you do not know that for sure. And it's an awfully, awfully big gamble to ask, I think, of a lot of kids.
And the let me interrupt real fast, and then we can move on to Ian Desmond. In the places where it's spiking the heaviest, particularly in the South, the biggest spike is among 20 to 35-year-olds, who are the people gathering in bars and gathering on beaches. I mean, it's no longer that's just grandma. Right. That's now an out-of-date trope. The fact is, it's affecting young people now, too, because young people thought they were immune, and they're finding out that they're not. So it's not even a question of age group anymore. It's a question of how much do you want to expose yourself? And if you do, you're getting it.
Let's get into Ian Desmond, who last night on Instagram exposed a level of thinking about things that obviously struck him to the point where Ian Desmond is not going to play baseball this upcoming season. And it was like he basically realized that all that is wrong with the United States could be found in all that it's wrong with baseball right now. And he writes, really? I mean, having been a major leaguer since 2009, he is certainly qualified to speak on the experience of a baseball player. And he put things on the table that you rarely hear from players, including putting his own clubhouse in check. He says, we have labor war. We have rampant individualism on the field. In clubhouses, we have racist, sexist, homophobic jokes, or flat-out problems. We've got cheating. We've got minority issues from the top down. I mean, tell me, does this sound familiar to any of you? We got African. We have one African-American general manager, two African-American managers, less than 8% black players, and not a single black majority team owner. Perhaps, and this is really where I think he nails it and just brings it back and really says, we are America. Perhaps most disheartening of all is a puzzling lack of focus on how to change these numbers. I mean, people will start a hashtag and tell you that this is good or this is bad and this needs to change and I'll never, ever, whatever again. What good did any of that do? What good? What mechanisms are being put in by baseball to improve things? I'll tell you right now, the black manager count isn't even, it's more embarrassing than two. Dave Roberts is half Japanese and
can't even see it. I mean, baseball is aggressively shrinking itself.
And there's a doubling effect.
And that's the biggest problem.
Yeah, there's a doubling effect because not only are they shrinking the available player pool, and not only are they discouraging lots of potentially future great athletes not to play their sport, also, you generally watch what you played as a kid more intensely than other things. Like, playing Little League, the vast majority of those kids are not going to the major leagues, but a good portion of them are probably going to be baseball fans. And the less you open that up to everybody, the smaller your fan base gets. So, and that, of course, is one of the things that Ian Desmond is pointing out, is that baseball fully has the capabilities to directly affect not only the player pool, but the fan base pool in a positive way moving forward, and they have utterly neglected to do so. And that's something I think we've talked about a lot.
Baseball writers are considering removing Kennesaw Mountain Landis, his name, from the MVP trophy. In 1920, he became the first commissioner of Major League Baseball. To say that his relationship with race is complicated is an insult to the word complicated. He, in his entire tenure as manager of Major League Baseball, not a single black player ever stepped foot on the baseball field. As a matter of fact, his name has been on the MVP award twice as big as the award winner's name himself since 1944. Jackie Robinson crossed the color line in 1947. So Kennesaw Mountain Landis had to die for the color barrier to be crossed. And now, you know, there's what should you name? Who should you name it after? What could you do? Well, to me, the easiest way to say it is just why don't you name it after the guy who's won more MVPs than anybody else in human history? But I don't think baseball writers are going to want to do that because the answer to that question is Barry Bonds. And we know how baseball writers feel about Barry Bonds. Let me just say about renaming the trophy. Sure, good idea. I don't care. If players care, they should. Their voices should be heard. But it doesn't matter if the MVP trophy says Ku Klux Klan on it if you're not aggressively promoting diversity in the system that is rigged against diversity. I mean, that's it. This is nonsense. Yeah, it's great. It's symbolically important, but it also accomplishes nothing. You know, there was a great tweet that I read. I don't know if you guys saw this. The man who voices Cleveland Brown on Family Guy and the Cleveland Show before it was canceled is actually a white voice actor. And he stepped away saying, you know, it is wrong for, you know, a white voice actor to be taking away Mike Henry is the guy's name, to be taking away an opportunity from a black voice actor. Okay, but it's also acting. And that's the job. It's acting. And you had a voice that fit the character. That's why you were cast. It probably wasn't a racial decision. It's just, you know, you had a good audition. Who knows? It's acting. But I understand you want representation and all this stuff. A woman responded to him saying, I'm no longer going to be doing the voice of Cleveland. And she basically said, you know, I just wanted
less black people dying when they are involved with police. This is not what I wanted. And that's where I think we need to come back. What the hell are we having this conversation for? To take Kennesaw Mountain Landis's name off of a plaque? To remove a vocal actor from a character in an animated television series? To pull down a statue of Columbus? Like, okay, but then how much further in America is a black man, woman, or child after that?
You know, a little further, first of all, there's a couple things about that to me. I mean, one thing is, as you said, those things do matter. And I think the more we get used to getting rid of all the little things that matter, the closer we get to winning the conversation in terms of how people learn to view the world. Because there are some people who can't be saved in this respect. There are some people who were raised racist and are going to be racist. But by removing the acquiescences we've made to racism over the years, we hopefully pave something better for the future. It doesn't mean the other stuff isn't more important. But I think the other problem here is you're seeing people who care do what they can. That's a voice actor who did what he could. That one guy felt weird about the situation that he was in and did what he could. Unfortunately, the big sort of systemic changes we need to get made, the levers of those decisions are controlled by people who are not listening. And I'm not sure there's anything that we can do right now to get them to listen besides get them the hell out of here.
Are we breaking? I was told we
were
breaking.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Plus, the three aren't analogous. I mean, Mike Henry choosing not to voice Cleveland Brown, that's a personal choice. Kennesaw Mountain Landis not only defended the color line, he aggressively defended it to the point where, during World War II, the Philadelphia Phillies were up for sale. Their owner had basically run out of money, and Bill Veeck was going to come in and buy the Phillies, who had been awful for more than a decade, and he was going to stock the team with Negro League players. And they were all fine with Veeck coming back to buy that team until he told them what he was going to do, and at that point, they froze him out. That's defending the color line. And that was Kennesaw Mountain Landis buttonholing separate owners, says, we can't let that happen. Kennesaw Mountain Landis' name coming off the trophy does matter, because that's not just a matter of, you know, animation inconvenience. That's a guy who actively retarded the growth of the sport and was being honored for it.
Sure. Take his name off the trophy. Did a single black person get hired today?
No, but that's not what that's about. What it is it's the same reason why you take down the statue of Robert E. Lee. It's, we're not going to honor people who stood in the way and in the way of progress.
Okay, but
this is not going to fix anything except that maybe people will start making judgments that don't sort of allow for the fact that, well, he was only a little bit racist. I mean, that's the thing. It's a no. Does it fix the economic problems? Absolutely not. But it's one thing you can do in a long series of things you have to do.
I'm just saying, tearing down the statue, good idea. Let's do it. Pull it down. Columbus, I get it. Pull it all down. I don't care. I don't care about a statue that's not the Willie Mays statue. Rip it the hell down. What do you do tomorrow?
What do you do tomorrow?
What do you do tomorrow? Or did you just symbolically rip a statue down, feel good about it, and go home and sit and think and put, you know, like, what do you do to change the system, not symbolically change imagery that supports a system? When we come on back, we'll set up the Tuesday trifecta in just a little bit. And I don't even really care about the Tuesday trifecta today. I want to talk about Carl Reiner. That's what I'm going to do. When we come on back, let's talk about Carl Reiner, one of the greatest comedians ever died this morning. And that's how I think I want to end the show. No more depressing crap. Chilton Auto Body
is open to serve the Bay Area with contact-free auto body repair options along with free pickup and delivery. Chilton Auto Body now offers virtual estimates and curbside contact-free service from the comfort of your vehicle. You can book an appointment today at ChiltonAutoBody.com. Carl Reiner, man. Oh, the 2,000-year-old man. We're coming on back in just a moment. Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
All right, I made an executive decision. We'll have another Tuesday, and we'll get to another Tuesday trifecta on another Tuesday. Today's the only day that Carl Reiner is going to die in our show's lifetime, and we need to spend a little time on one of the true comedic geniuses that has ever lived, and we are going to get there in just a second. But we were talking about Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game. We were talking a little bit about how, you know, it's nice to have a symbolic statue torn down, or if baseball writers decide to change the MVP award and remove Kennesaw Mountain Landis's name from it, great. That's super duper. But what do you then do next? I am cynical enough, Ray and Matt, to believe that a cosmetic adjustment might be sold by a less than overly zealous, desirous to change things, Major League Baseball, NBA, whatever your sport that you want to criticize. But I could see this sold as, hey, you know what? We did scrub a racist name off the MVP plaque, and congratulations, baseball solved racism. You're welcome, America. Like, I'm cynical enough to think that the cosmetic move will be sold as progress, not a correction. And by the way, it's not even baseball's progress. It would be baseball writers' progress. So,
yeah, no, the answer to that is you do this now because it's the thing in front of you. And the thing that comes after that is the thing that comes after that. And you do all of it. You don't let this pass because you have the opportunity now to change it. And it doesn't take much to change it.
I'm afraid that
you
do
all the other things, and whoever wants to take credit and claim, well, then baseball's fixed. Well, the point is you hold their feet to the fire and say, no, it's not fixed. This was nothing in the greater picture. Now we're going to tackle the bigger problems. This is an easy one. It takes a half an hour. But you then move on to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing, because nobody thinks that solving social inequity is going to be done in a week or a month or a year.
It's will they how even be trying, being though? Relentless. A week or month, a year from now, will they even be trying? I mean, honestly, is this cause
I don't know.
Cause du jour? Are we going to get through this, get into baseball, trying to figure it out, and then just getting through baseball season will be the focus of baseball, not fixing systemic racism in baseball? They're just going to try to get nine innings in.
Well, and they probably will. But the point is, those who can affect change need to keep doing it. And that means Ian Desmond continuing to speak up, and Doug Glanville continuing to speak up, and all the other people have spoke up about this stuff.
And it might mean more protests. And it might mean more, you know, it might mean nothing changes until the right people get voted into office. It might mean nothing changes until somehow the protests lead to a radical reconstruction of the entire government. I have no idea what it's going to take, but I'm not going to dismiss any steps along the way.
No, good steps, but that's the thing. I just don't think a step that is the equivalent of a bumper sticker or a T-shirt is a solution. That's the thing. I'm afraid people are going to get okey-doked in a lot of instances, and I think putting the okey-doke on people who are easily confused and misled is going to be part of the solution to get less than desirous of really finding a solution people through this conversation. There's my cynicism of the day.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with you that more action is needed, and drastically so, and hopefully that happens, and I think we all need to continue demanding it. But I think sometimes the dumbest stuff can have a surprisingly big effect. Just because you said the word, a Black Lives Matter bumper sticker doesn't do much. Maybe it's a $3 donation to charity, and then you put it on your car. But truly, if 60% of cars had Black Lives Matter bumper stickers,
there are people who right now view Black Lives Matter as a fringe organization that would change their mind. And it might be dumb, and I'm not saying if you bought a Black Lives Matter bumper sticker, congratulations, you fixed racism and you're done. But I also don't want to dismiss any steps, and especially for major organizations that have historically resisted making steps at all. A step as seemingly irrelevant as getting a racist off of the MVP trophy, it does mean something.
How about this? Do you want to look at less racist baseball writers? Let Barry Bonds in the Hall of Fame.
That'd be good.
Be a nice place to start. Craig Calcaterra, NBC Sports, who covers baseball, had something really interesting, and I'd like to share it with you because this is where baseball needs to start approaching its problems. Again, sure, start moving, you know, removing names and racist trope throughout your land, if you will. But this is what's really important. He was talking about a story that he'd worked on a few years ago, and he was interviewing with three teams about who they were interviewing to come and be part of their future in their front offices. In D.C., I interviewed with three teams. Every kid, adult, whatever you want to call them, was white. They were all white with expensive degrees. I spoke to four guys who were interviewing with one of the teams, and they bragged about how their parents had enough money to pay for their apartment, their insurance, and whatever comes with moving for any job in baseball that you might need. And a kid who is Latino asked Craig Calcaterra, "So what about me? Because I can't do that. I'm actually living off a refund check and I eat McDonald's for dinner. But who cares? Because this is going to work one way or the other. I have my contacts and all that BS. But by the end of the day, will a team hire a young Latin American kid who wants to learn, wants to guarantee his fiance a better life down the road and wants to help his own family eventually? Or are they going to hire the 24-year-old kid in a slick suit who graduated from Yale with a degree in economics who can live in the office 24 hours a day with no outside responsibilities? That's an easy answer. And I don't fault teams for hiring qualified candidates, but I really don't know why they sit there and gripe about diversity problems when the answer is right in front of them." That was pretty good.
No, it speaks to yet one of the many disconnects in baseball in particular, and especially now that more and more general managers are young Ivy League business types. It's a place that people of color don't usually get into to begin with, and given the fact that most hirings in most sports have a fair amount of, hey, you look like me, you speak the same language I do in terms of business, I'll hire you. It's the fact that people of means can start in baseball because they pay everybody poorly because they think that's sort of how you make your bones in baseball. So somebody who's economically disadvantaged but every bit as bright is already, you know, I can't afford to do this. I need a job where I get paid and I get benefits and there's a level of sort of security and advancement.
Look, and it happens in radio. I mean, there's not a starting position in radio where the salary doesn't totally suck. And it's a lot easier to take on a salary that totally sucks or take an internship for free if you have some means lent to you by your parents, whoever might help you, you know, take that first step into your professional life. If they've got money, you're going to have a leg up on the person that does not.
But if you're talking about improving your diversity, as baseball constantly does, at some point you have to prioritize that.
Yeah, do something about
it. And they're not prioritizing it because it says, well, this is only going to pay $15,000 a year, and you're not getting benefits, and you're going to work ridiculous hours, and you're going to be driving players to and from the airport all the time. That's the deal. And if you're really, really good and somebody takes a liking to you, maybe you can advance. None of that speaks to the notion of we want to improve diversity in our front offices. That's the problem. I mean, Farhan Zaidi is about as diverse as it gets in baseball management. but he is sort of also the classic modern executive because he was a business guy. He did go to an Ivy League school. He fits all the other profiles that you have to almost overcome if you want diversity to be part of what you do. And I haven't seen any evidence that he has, you know, that he has not tried to be diverse. I mean, hiring a woman coach, you know, that's a sign. But if you want systemic change in the place where suits get worn, you have to break the mold that everybody's been comfortable living in. That's how you become more diverse. You don't do the easy, lazy thing. You find the people who, A, not only can do the job really well, but give you a different kind of profile to give you avenues to a market that you're refusing to serve.
Yeah, I think these things all have ways to combat them. But like many businesses, I think what these teams and leagues really mean when they say they want diversity is that they would like for within their company to exist enough diversity that no one gives them a hard time about it.
Right.
They are not actually interested in changing the way they operate because, like Ray was just pointing out, to some extent, you're going to have to change what you're looking for because part of what systemic racism means is that black and brown people have not been given the same opportunities to amass the credentials that you've been demanding. And, you know, it's a convenient excuse to say, well, we really just want, you know, Ivy League educated people from this social strata, what have you, and pretend that you're not ruling out a wide swath of otherwise qualified
folks. I only wanted to date supermodels, but that's not how the world works. Or
right,
shouldn't be
exactly. Yeah.
So, look.
Yeah, you came damn close. Stop complaining.
I got very lucky. Very, very lucky. Second Chris Kardaki reference, I outkicked the coverage for sure. Can we get to Carl Reiner to wrap up today's show?
Yeah.
And Matt, I know you're going on vacation. This is your last show before the 4th of July. Carl Reiner, I don't know how many in our audience are aware of the name, the gravity, the weight that this man carried. He dominated show business for 70 years. He came from a generation that produced a generation of comedians that will never exist again. That style and sense of humor will never, ever exist again. He lived to entertain adults with a combination of brilliance, pith, and schlock like no one has ever, ever brought to the table. And, of course, Mel Brooks being his, you know, bosom buddy through all of it is about as on brand as humanly possible. Do you think our audience understands who Rob Reiner is? Or, excuse me, who Carl Reiner is?
Probably not, but comedy typically does not age well because societal mores change, and we're finding that out more these days than ever before. His comedy held up well because his comedy with Mel Brooks held up well because their comedy with Sid Caesar held up well. That's the test of time that almost nobody in entertainment even gets applied to them, let alone pass. He is one of those guys. I don't know that we can explain it to them without guiding them to Google or YouTube to see what they did and how they did it in the conditions that they did it to find out that, yeah, this might not be the comedy you're used to, but you're going to laugh. You're going to laugh.
It's still funny.
Just watch the 2,000-year-old man. It's so, so good. But, I mean, you're talking about a guy who created and, I believe, wrote every one of the Dick Van Dyke Show. So that's how early his impact starts, particularly in the world of TV. And I think in a lot of ways he's like an unseen hand on just the world of comedy because he was not as visible as Mel Brooks, but the two of them, it's an indelible and unmatched comedic legacy.
He predates the Dick Van Dyke Show.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.